Osiris.
All right, hey everyone. This is the Helping Friendly Podcast. We're here with a guest who's been on before, Todd Ahrens. Hey, Todd.
Hey, guys.
Good to have you back. I didn't get to speak with you last time, but Jonathan and Brad did. I think you were on episode 82. And you guys talked about an early show back then, right? Right, Jonathan? Was it a...
It was a, yeah, 90 show.
90.
Todd's been seeing the fish for a couple of years, so we dug back into one of the older ones for him.
Yeah, it's awesome. And that was, it was cool to hear your perspective, Todd. We don't actually have very many guests or listeners really who saw fish that early on, but good to get your perspective again. And this time we're going to another continent together.
Yes. Jonathan, thanks for having me.
Yeah. Jonathan, can you tell the listeners a little bit about how this one came together?
Okay. So we were doing the 1999 episode with Wade just a few weeks back, and we casually glossed over the Japan shows, and I thought, wow, you know, we shouldn't have done that. There's a lot to talk about here. And I think I texted you while we were recording, RJ. I said, we should just do a whole episode. I know a guy. And then before we were done, I had already texted Todd, and he agreed to join us. So
and here we are.
And here we are.
And Brad is here.
Hey.
Hi, Brad. Guess. It's nice to see your beard in person. I mean, on the internet, Brad, once
internet
again.
Person.
Just so the listeners know, Brad, his beard is still fulsome.
but we are here to talk about other exotic fish happenings. As we mentioned earlier, we're going to talk about fish in Japan. And yeah, this cropped up while we were doing the 1999 episode. I thought we really needed to talk about Fuji Rock, and what better way to do that than to talk to somebody who went. And so, Todd, of course, I'm extremely jealous that you went to Japan for these shows, but I'm going to get over that and ask you to tell us a little bit about
lucky.
A little bit about how you got yourself there, you know, and so tell us about the scene, and then we'll talk about the shows a little bit specifically.
Sure. So yeah, that was kind of actually funny story, kind of lucked into it, but I was dating a girl at the time, and her dad happened to work for Delta Airlines and was also a huge Jets fan. And I knew a guy that was a ticket broker. And I scored him 2 playoff tickets to the Jets. And this guy had never been to Jets playoffs, and he was so stoked. And so he said, hey, I'm going to give you 2 first-class tickets to anywhere in the, you know, anywhere in the world.
Whoa.
So, so we got these 2 free tickets, and it was pretty much a no-brainer once they announced that. Once they announced those shows, it was yeah, let's go to fish in Japan.
What about to your girlfriend's dad, who's probably not a fish fan? Like, what are you going to do with the? You can go anywhere in the world, Todd. Where are you going to go? I'm going to go to see fish in Japan.
Yeah, this is Japan. I don't know. I wasn't really very close with them. I mean, he did give me the free tickets, but I don't remember having to explain that off. But
it's not like you said I'm going to go see fish in Iowa.
Yeah, they weren't big fans of me anyway, so I don't know whether it would have affected their opinion of me anyway. I've since she's not my girlfriend anymore, put it that way. But so yeah, we got out there, and that was kind of the impetus, was the free ticket, and had a few other friends going. One of my friends is a Japanese American, so we had a interpreter along for the ride, which was helpful.
I bet.
And
nice.
Yeah, I don't recall exactly how it was, but landed in Japan and then just took long train rides out to the Alps. And show was in Naiba, Fuji Rock Fest. And pretty much almost like any ski town you'd find in Colorado or anywhere in the US, just big mountains, and we all stayed at the hotel at the at the base of the mountain, big ski lodge. If anybody wants to go on YouTube and Google or YouTube search for Fish Fuji Rock, I've got some videos up there, and you can kind of get a glimpse of the hotel and
nice.
The physical surroundings. But it was pretty, I mean, it was gorgeous, Japanese Alps, and pretty much like any kind of ski area you'd find around here.
So I looked at those videos over the weekend, and we should try to remember RJ to put them on the blog.
Yeah,
but it looked a lot like any American fest too. It didn't really, you know, just in the general, you know, you had some vendors and you had some tent action and just people laying about in the sun having a great time. It didn't look particularly unusual. I noticed that unlike the European fest, there didn't seem to be a lot of the big flag, you know, like if you see, I don't know.
Glastonbury or something.
Glastonbury. Yeah. That's what I was digging for. You know, everybody's got a giant flag somewhere, but.
And it really seemed a lot more orderly than that too. I mean, you should have seen the,
I think that's racist.
You should have seen the recycling centers they had going and,
That's great.
Yeah, it was just Japanese. They knew how to do it, and it was boiling hot. So it's funny that you mentioned the heat, but probably 100 degrees and really humid there. Wow. But yeah, it was not unlike really a typical. I mean, I don't know what I would compare it to a typical American food, but it was a giant rock fest. ZZ Top was there. I forget who else. I think Chemical Brothers, Rage Against the Machine. Which I did happen to catch, and that was awesome. But yeah, really.
Where'd you fly into, and was it just Tokyo?
So flew into Tokyo, and then took trains pretty far. It was pretty far train from Tokyo. I believe it was overnight. I don't know how many hours, but. Yeah, you just get further and further out into the countryside, and it's beautiful country out there for sure. Giant mountains.
Awesome.
I just want to jump in and just say, Jonathan, that you were happy for Todd that he went to Japan instead of Iowa. And I just want to tell you that Fish has now played more shows in Japan than they've played in Iowa. As it should be.
But so they did play a pretty good show in Iowa. And that's Idaho.
I'm just saying, I think we're on the right track highlighting Todd's trip to Japan rather than Fish's five shows in Iowa, personally.
Yeah.
I think you might be right. So let's talk a little bit about the music. So they played, I guess, the day before the festival, they did a sound check that is available with the live Fish release along with the 31st. So on the 29th, they released a What's the Use from the 29th. And I got to say, if you're not familiar with that, people should go and listen to it because it's this like perfect, it's live setting, live setup, but no audience. So you will never hear a quieter quote live What's the Use.
Nice. Right.
Yeah. And I have not heard that. So I need to track that down.
Yeah,
it makes me obviously think of those Magnum Ball shows.
That quiet,
right? I mean, yeah. So that's maybe the second. The Magnum Ball would be the second quietest. Let's see.
But then the next day they get started, and it was confusing. And I think you corrected me on this when I was putting the set list together, Todd. So there was an early afternoon set. And then like a regular, like full show later in the day.
Well, so basically they did, they were the first band to play the festival, and they did one set on the green stage, which was the main stage, where all the headlining acts were playing. They just did the one set there, and then they had their own area, probably about a mile walk away from the whole festival where no other bands played. Fish had their own, the Field of Heaven. So that was completely separate, and we can get to that. But for this first set, I want to say they started at about 11 a.m. On the green stage, and it wasn't as crowded as it would get. But I mean, that was where you know, all the, you know, regular festival goers were there that weren't there just to see fish. You know, when you got to the Field of Heaven, it was pretty much everyone made that giant walk just to see fish. So they did set to, you know, thousands of people. And then that night they did a fish headline set. And then for the two nights, they did three headlining shows, two sets each at the Field of Heaven.
Tell us a little bit about the audience. I mean, lots of fish only fans, local fans. Sounds like it's kind of far out, so probably not too many of those. But, you know, what were your experience? Did you run into people that you would see at, you know, MSG or anything?
Well, I don't think there are any local fans to Naiba, you know, out there in the Alps.
Right,
but, So at that first set, like I said, it was just a pretty good cross section of the festival crowd, not necessarily fish fans. And then when you got to where they're playing the headline sets in the Field of Heaven, you had your contingent of U.S. folks that had traveled. I think, I was probably with 15 people that I knew, and there's probably 50 Americans or so from tour in total. We have a big picture, and I'd say there's, 50, maybe 60 people that made the trip, but plenty of Japanese heads, the Big Frog crew, and all the, lots of local Japanese, not local to the ski area, but local to Japan. They have a pretty sizable scene, and everyone was so nice and super stoked and super thankful for fish to be there. So it was a world of difference from the Field of Heaven when he stepped in that to going out to, the Rage Against the Machine stage. That's for sure.
I guess we should know this, but did any of the other bands play three nights? Or
I don't believe so. Yeah, I don't think so at all.
It's interesting that they really tailored an environment for fish.
Yeah, and it was cool. You'll see on my video, you walk through just wooded paths, and they hung big dream catchers and different things from the woods to get to this, probably mile, maybe mile and a half. It was a good 25-minute walk from the hotel to get to the Field of Heaven, and you really had to find it. There were kind of just small signs pointing you the direction, and as we were walking to fish, there's thousands of people walking the other way. They have no idea what they're missing. So it's pretty funny. There was the green stage, and I think then in the middle was the white stage, which was the kind of, 10,000 person stage. And then further past that, way further past that, was the Field of Heaven. And I think that the green stage, which was the headliner stage, I would guess there's probably close to 100,000 people at that festival. It's a big festival.
Wow. And it looks
a lot.
And from the listening to it, it seems like Fish basically did a festival set there. Chalk Dust Opener, Gaiuti, standard good Wolfmans, but it doesn't really go out or anything. Nice taste.
That green set stage is pretty fairly pedestrian. I mean, it's solid.
It's not
for
bad.
Sure, but it. No, it's good. But they don't really go out there. I mean, it's 11 in the morning and it's 100 degrees. Oh, but people were digging it, as you can see on my video. People were definitely, we were loving it for sure.
So then that night they play over the Field of Heaven, and then you get a full fish show.
Yes.
And that's a pretty good show. I personally love the Ghost a lot. I listened to that Ghost about three times when we were revisiting these things. It's not the only great thing. What do I have in my notes? The Ghost, the Disease is like 20 some minutes long. It's a nice little Reba. And I think that Bike with Fishman on guitar might be my favorite Bike of all time.
Yeah, that was awesome. Now, my wife will fight for the Bike from Japan 2000.
Sure.
Till the ends of the earth, because that was believe it or not, her highlight of Japan 2000. But that first night, the Ghost is definitely the star. So yeah, as soon as I went in 99, it was just when they announced it in 2000, it was like, gotta go back. So, and people that were kicking themselves for not going to 99 were like, oh, you've got to go. You know, my now wife, who I was just together with then, she, you know, was like, we got to go. So, I'm sure we'll get to this in the 2000 part, but you know, we went to, back then it was a lot more affordable. We went to, STA, which is Student Travel Agency. And even though we weren't students, we told them we were, and, we got tickets to Japan, for that 2000 tour, and then over to Thailand for 10 days. And then back through Japan for $600.
Wow.
And so that's like, you know, it cost me more than that to fly to the MSG shows this New Year's.
Right, right.
Than to go to that. So, and you get the Japan rail and it's really cheap. Everything in Japan is expensive. The hotels are expensive. The food's expensive. But back then, getting there was a lot more affordable than I would imagine. Yeah.
So we're getting way ahead of ourselves, though.
Yes.
So, yeah, great show, the first show, the whatever evening of the 30th. And then I think people are probably more familiar with this show from the 31st because Fish released this through Live Fish to benefit the Japanese earthquake relief effort a few years back. But it's a really great show. It's really nice. A good 2001 and Bowie. The Caspian is really big and really, really good. And
really then, good. Really good.
Stood out to me. Yeah.
And a very special Brian and Robert with a guest who, of a Tibetan monk, I think it is. And who Trey had played with at, Carnegie Hall.
Right. I was at that as well.
And, and that's beautiful. So I don't think we'll play any of that because it's officially released, but everybody should go to their Live Fish. And if you didn't buy it before, you should get that. It's really great.
I mean, that Bowie, I mean, if I was going to pick one thing from the whole 3-night run of Fuji Rock, it would very possibly be that Bowie.
That's not a bad call.
It is super sick.
Yeah. And you know, one of the things that kind of was surprising to me. Number one, I like the Limb by Limb, of course, in the first set of these late 90s, obviously are my favorite of those. But the 2001 Into the Bowie, the 2001 got into 2001 really quickly, almost like they knew that Bowie was coming and they wanted to get there or maybe trade it or, you know, something. But once they got there, that's a hefty Bowie and it's really, really nice.
And I have to say, I mean, people were just soaking it up. I mean, the Japanese fans were just, they were really happy for Fish to be there.
I was thinking they had to have made some fans or at least cemented some, like, there had to, you know, now knowing they had to walk an extra mile to get there, I would figure there probably weren't a huge number of casual people drifting in, but the people who came were rewarded for the effort.
Yeah. And I mean, as you mentioned, I mean, people knew, I mean, it was almost like, you know, a pretty typical US scene. I mean, they just had vending, ringing the whole field of heaven. It was all just, you know, typical hippie, you know, import
shit
vending type of stuff. Yeah. you know, teepees and just really cool, very mellow vibe. And, yeah, I just have to say that Field of Heaven was a really beautiful place. It was just tucked in around mountains. It kind of reminds me of my first show in Townsend. It could have been really anywhere in Vermont, just kind of like low hills and green. And so, yeah, people were stoked to be there and they received that Bowie well.
Sounds for sure. Sounds pretty ideal if you think about it, that there's two other stages that are bigger for all the fans that we would complain about, right, to go to. And then
us,
you know, nitpicker weirdos can go to the smaller stage and just soak it up, like you said.
Well, yeah, let your hair down.
And the band can be in a place that's a little bit like home for them. So
yeah, it would kind of be like going to Jazz Fest and avoiding the main stage, but then having a whole different main stage for Fish, like far away from everything. Which is, if you've ever been to Jazz Fest, that's part of the main thing, right? It's just like so crowded and you have to suffer through like all the main act people.
Yeah. And the heat, just like Todd was saying.
Yeah. So was it still 100 at night, or what happened at night? Did it cool off significantly?
At night it was perfect. Really. It was perfect temperature, really, I would say. But you guys are right. I mean, you've got, I'm going to say 60 plus thousand at this green stage, and then 15,000-20,000 at the white stage, and then maybe 2,000 at the Field of Heaven. I mean, you could walk up from the back to the rail freely anytime during the show. I mean, you could stand at the rail and there wouldn't be somebody within 10 feet of you.
Wow. It's just like today. Sounds pretty similar.
That happened to me at MSG over New Year's. I walked straight up there.
Just giving people high fives.
You know, I just went up and waved a tray and then walked back. It was cool.
I wouldn't say necessarily the Caspian stuck out to me. I mean, I remember the 2001 Bowie just being like, holy crap. I mean, it is pretty, I don't want to say standard 99 because that's awesome. But I wouldn't say that stuck out to me. And I didn't see a lot that summer. I'd gone to, went to Atlanta, I went to PNC and Camden and Oswego.
Barely any.
I mean, it's all good. But just the whole, it was just the atmosphere. I mean, they could have come out and played a crappy show and it would have just been, which they, you know, thankfully didn't, but it would have still been awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That makes sense. Yeah, our friend Patrick, by the way, guys, he's probably listening. He said that we glossed over Oswego too. So yeah. Now we need to go back and do a whole, we need to do Big Cypress, Oswego, and Japan. So Japan, now we're doing that. So the other two we have to do. Check.
Sounds like we got Todd will be on that one too.
Yeah, well, it's hard. There's just so much. I mean, just listening to all this Japan stuff, it's a lot to cover. So, you know, you gloss over it and it's so easy to take a deep dive into any of that stuff, really.
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you for making excuses for us.
Really appreciate that and need it. Sunday night, 8-1, another really great show. This one, you know, it starts off with a Cities Rift Wilson MoMA sequence, which is good, but to me it was really when it reached Divided Sky that it takes off, like really takes off. Mm-hmm. That's just me. I also really like the melt. I thought that was nice, heavy weird melt, but really ultimately the tweezer is what it came down to for me.
So we all were late. We slept like all day and we're rushing to this show because we were sure they were going to do some kind of shakedown opener or something for Jerry's birthday. We were convinced there was going to be some kind of Jerry's birthday thing, but there wasn't. But anyway, we made it there on time. And the first set does have some highlights, but it's really the second set. And I would maybe attribute it to in between sets was when Rage Against Machine was playing. So Fish got on their golf carts after the first set. They booked it to the main stage. We all ran through the woods. Nice. I busted my knee on this. You know, we ran like the mile back to catch Rage Against the Machine. And then everybody hoofed it back for the second set. And I always thought, you know, Fish just went and watched Rage Against the Machine from the stage and got some kind of, mojo from that, or
testosterone, right?
Yeah, whatever. And went back and played a killer second possum set, and
came back and opened with Possum.
Right. Well, yeah,
that's pretty crazy.
It's a good. That's possum, cool.
Though. Todd, was it the same crowd size like throughout?
Yeah, pretty consistent. Mm-hmm. I would bet the same people came back every night. You know, I would maybe it grew a little bit. People that came one of the other nights was like, I'm definitely going back that night that didn't know Fish. So maybe it grew, but it was still basically uncrowded. Nice. You know, I would just guess 2,000 to 3,000 at the most 3,000. That seems pretty
amazing.
Amazing. That's awesome. So this second set to me, sorry, Jonathan, is, I mean, it's got everything, the tweezer, the mics, Hydrogen Groove, Wedge, Lizards, and then, you know, the YEM to fit. Jeez, like, it's, they really, this isn't a festival set. And I guess they're 3 days in. So, you know, as Todd said, they're letting their hair down too. So what a great way to end.
Plus, they don't want to leave anything on the table. I mean, this is it.
Right. And they probably don't know if they're coming back or not. And everyone was so, you know, welcoming to them. Like, they just knew they were feeding off of it for sure. I mean, there was by far more Japanese heads than I mean, they were feeling that energy. So, yeah. And that tweezer is so sick. And the segue into Llama, like we talked about, is just, it's just nuts. And then I was saying that hydrogen is ridiculous. It's like almost, I think it's 10 or 11 minutes and they just go into some ambient jam for 5 minutes before they even start hydrogen. I've never heard anything like that. So, yeah, killer set.
I think that's perfect button right there. Killer set.
Jonathan, can I say something real quick? Sorry.
Of course.
The into the Llama was that you mentioned, that we all mentioned a little bit from the tweezer, reminded me of that. I don't know if you, just because I was at the show from Champagne 97, where they went into Llama from Bathtub Gin, which was really, like, at the time, that was, like, really amazing, because they just, it's just sort of appeared out of nowhere. But this one is much more smooth, I think. And I don't know, maybe unexpected based on the kind of ambient and blissy majority of that tweezer.
Right. And you know, that tweezer, what is it, like 9 minutes in, it gets to this really melodic kind of anthemic bit.
That's
just that, gorgeous.
That sounds like Meat Stick to me.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah.
And then I saw your note about it and I was like,
maybe thought, that's just me.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. We'll let everybody else tell us about it.
I'm wired a little different.
So you think it sounds like they're playing a Fire on the Mountain jam?
Well, Meat Stick, but yeah, it's, it gets you.
So we're going to fast forward See what happened. Fish came back. They played a bunch more shows, and Big Cypress happened, and they completed it. They had nothing else they had to do with their lives, but still they did, and they played Radio City. Did you go to Radio City, Todd?
I did, and Roseland. Yep.
Nice.
And and then they went to Japan.
Yeah. So we were flying high from those, literally from those a few days in New York. I mean, I was living in New York at the time, but those two radio cities in the Roseland, and like I said, we just went and got those student tickets, and we're super psyched to go see those club shows in Japan. And the 2000 tour was a totally different animal from the 99 thing, because you were every night, you know, taking a train to a different, small club than three nights at a festival. And, you know, Fish was on the train with you. They're probably in the car ahead of you, or you'd be waiting with them on the platform. And,
wow.
Yeah. So it was every night, a totally different room, different room size, different crowd, different crowd mix. So yeah, totally different animal and really awesome.
It's funny because we've heard, you know, the really awesome stories of like the late 90s European tours. Tom told us a great story. I guess maybe we had to cut it, but there was some, just the buses and stuff that they would take between cities in Europe. And this is a whole different, you know, advanced society where they take high speed rail places. So, another awesome adventure that it's great to hear about.
I mean, yeah, it was easy to travel. I mean, the whole length of the country. They have the bullet train, and then they have the super bullet train, which is even faster. And you just go, you know, you can travel so much, so quickly on those things, and they're so smooth, and they got the sake cart going up and down, and so kind of, it was a good time.
That's
for sure.
That sounds pretty great. So I'm all in for the sake cart.
Yes.
So the first three shows though were in and around Tokyo, right?
Yes.
And On Air East, it's just a club.
Yeah. Right? So that was pretty, that was right downtown, and it was a pretty straightforward rock club. Might've been a bar in the back. That was one of the bigger shows of the whole run. I would guess maybe 1500, 2000, and a really good opener. I mean, everyone's going to go right to the tweezer for that, or at least I do. But a lot of really cool, I mean, solid first set, and yeah, a lot of cool things to buy. The Mango song, a lot of good stuff in this show.
Yeah. I've got notes about the MoMA dance in the first set being really groovy. Axilla, raging Axilla opener into Taste, and right. Then Billy Breathes, lovely. But yeah, really Tweezer nice is pretty great. Funk 49 stuff in there, and
you can just tell they're stoked to be back there. And right. And like I just kept telling myself, it's so cool to see Fish at these small clubs like in the old days, but with this new material and all the new gear and effects and whatever, their new sound. But, you know, their arena sound, but shrunk down to this, you know, olden times size venue. So,
yeah, I have
you
this,
feel like, go ahead.
I have this theory that Fish, particularly more and more as the years go by, they play better, more cohesively, the closer they stand. So if you put them all on top of a truck or maybe on the right. roof of a fake house in ghost makeup, they're
facing each other.
Facing each other and just physically closer together. They play right. better.
Yes.
It's probably why they get really hyped for things in the band room and they come out and put them on stage and we all have our own feelings about them after. But it's got to translate in when they're playing these club shows, right?
It's probably something to that. And just the fact that you've got, I mean, people with their chins on the stage just pushed up against and you know, and you can see all the way to the back of the room. You could put your eyes on every single person in the room. So
not a moat between the band and the audience. So tell us a little bit about the sound? Was it, do you think with the arena sound shrunk down that you could catch all the details? I mean, you usually can anyway, but, you know, was the volume still up? You know what I mean?
I thought it was stellar. I mean, it was loud and in your face and you were hearing every detail. So that's what I mean. It was just like that arena sound, so huge, but shrunk down. I mean, they had it dialed and this was a dedicated concert, you know, club. Right. So it was good acoustics and
still probably one of the first times in a while, aside from maybe Fuji Rock, where they didn't carry their own PA.
Yeah, I don't know the details.
Yeah, I mean, I know
that if they did. Well,
didn't study the contracts and the writers.
I didn't happen to carry the PA in. That's for sure. But yeah, shoot, I forget what I was gonna say. Well, I was going to say, you know, they did Roseland the week before, which is another small venue, but it's pretty cruddy sounding. I've seen some good shows there, but I mean, so that will, and Radio City is small, but just Japan was a whole other, I mean, every show sound wise was in your face.
Awesome.
I mean, just there was no escape from it, really, in a good way.
So, the next night was also in Tokyo. It was at Zepp. Is that right?
At Zepp. Yep.
Mm-hmm. At Zepp.
Zepp was a really good show and a very cool venue. This one was out of town. We had to take a taxi pretty far out of town, maybe an hour, and you get out of downtown and out of the skyscrapers. And Zepp was more like, and maybe not an hour, but it was like I don't know if it's an amusement park. They have a giant Ferris wheel, like the one in Seattle, or like one of those humongous Ferris wheels, right. And then a huge arcade. And then I'll tell you about what happened after the show in a little bit. They have a little internal roller coaster there. So yes. it's basically a fun park. With a concert venue. The concert venue was pretty square.
Inside?
But yeah, indoor.
Okay.
Pretty nondescript square room, but awesome. But the funny thing was they had this giant arcade outside. And so before the show, this was before they had Guitar Hero in the US. And so Trey stepped up to it and everybody was, you know, not everybody, but, you know, 10 people were standing around watching him and he was getting the worst score. He was sitting there doing the thing and we were all laughing because he was Trey and he couldn't play the guitar video game, which makes sense because he was, you know, actually playing guitar and then playing a video game.
But, he's like, these buttons don't make sense. Life.
Yeah, exactly.
That's pretty awesome, actually.
Yeah, but really cool show. I mean, awesome disease opener. Piper is sick.
Yeah, I got a note by that Piper. I mean, it's just killer. And the disease is really, yeah. I mean,
five song first set,
and one of those is a lawn boy.
So. You just have to say that, like, I mean, to me, every single song at every one of these shows pretty much just has a little bit of an extra oomph. I mean, the Japan stuff kind of has a different flavor to me. It was really cool. I was happy to go back and listen to it all because I hadn't dug into it too deeply. But yeah, everything has a little bit of a, you know, that extra push, and I just think it sounds killer. I mean, you can't go wrong with anything.
You give a shout out to that gin and a twist as well.
Mm. Well, Piper and Twist in the same show, and they weren't anywhere near each other. You know, first set versus second set. It's pretty cool. But as you were saying, Todd, maybe there's a little carryover from the 99, and they finished that off with a bang. So,
right. And then I'll say with the Heavy Things opener, second set, I'll just say that Heavy Things followed us around all over Japan. This was right when Farmhouse came out, and we were hearing it in taxis and hotel lobbies. They must have been doing such a good promo push because it was on every radio station. Wow. And we were hearing it everywhere. I guess that was the single. I thought maybe Farmhouse would have been. But I think they only play it two times in these eight or nine shows, however many shows there are. But it was like literally all, you know, restaurants, everywhere we went, we'd get in a taxi and it would be Heavy Things. And so a little shout out to that. That was cool.
Wow.
And so then before we go to the next show, the next funny thing is, you know, we were all spun and obviously doing whatever. And after the show, they had this roller coaster. It's basically all attached to the venue. So you walk out of the venue, and then this roller coaster was like a police theme. So they put you in, when instead of waiting in the line for the roller coaster, they put you in this booking room where you wait, and it's a pretend police station, and all the people are dressed up like police. And then, and so we were, you know, in our state of mind, not everybody was so thrilled with the whole mock police set up, but then they put you on this cool roller coaster and we rode it around, and very cool venue. And then later on, there's a Zep in Osaka, which is pretty cool too.
Okay, so the next night was at the outdoor theater that I probably shouldn't try to pronounce. Hibiya.
You got it.
Nice.
And Big Frog opened. And, you know, I met those guys in at Fuji Rock, and they were super cool. They have a big crew of friends, and we spun them all, and they were all super nice and friendly. and really nice people, and good set too. They have a recording out there if you want to check it out. Not of the show, but they have a studio recording that's worth checking out.
For the Amphibian tour a couple years later, and we saw them and met them and hung out a little bit, and they're good guys and really like that band.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, me too. So that Hibiya Outdoor Theater, it's a really cool amphitheater right in downtown Tokyo. So you're surrounded by skyscrapers. You walk into a park and it's wooded, and then it's a natural amphitheater, and you can go find pictures of it online. But it's a gorgeous spot, and it's surrounded by skyscrapers. You know, unfortunately, it was raining, and it was kind of a little rough. It was just, you know, cloudy and rainy, and it started early. It was daylight for the whole show. So I want to say it was like a 3 o'clock show.
That's weird.
And I will say that it's the only show I've been to where they're vending fried octopus balls outside. Oh, yeah. So, yeah. So, and we got some, and they're pretty cool. Nice. They put a promo fans, little Japanese fans, Fish Farmhouse fans on every seat. Most of them got kind of wrecked by the rain. I was going to drag one from around here to show you, but I got a couple back. But they that was kind of cool. They did a giveaway on every seat. You know, Elektra did a little thing. But the show itself was probably the not strongest of the whole run. But the venue was awesome. Yeah. And because still it's really good. I mean,
it's a good set list.
I could say it's the worst show of the run, but it was just outside and rainy, and the highlight was the was definitely the encore when the rain cleared during Character Zero and a rainbow went from one end of the stage to the other. That was and left everybody with a smile on their face. So it's a real really good show.
Convinced there was a god.
It just doesn't reach the peaks of every other show. And they filmed it for TV. You can go, I think, watch every song, multicam pro shot, which is pretty cool if you want to check it out.
Yeah, pretty sure that's on the YouTubes.
But I wish that some of the other shows had been multicam pro shot.
Well,
You
got to rain does kind of take things out of it sometimes. Jones Beach, for example, although once you stuck through that one, it turned into an awesome rock concert, and it sounds like that's what happened with Zero too.
So, yeah, I mean, sometimes it gives it a little push, but sometimes it does put a damper on the festivities. But I mean, still, I mean, killer venue. So there's like one photo of me from this show that somebody sent me, and I'm like smiling ear to ear. So I know I must have been having a good time.
So it wasn't all bad.
Yeah, and this was another. I think the Tokyo shows were the three biggest. This one was pretty. I'd say there were 2,000 people. This one would be my guess.
Man, oh man, things are dreams are made of. So let's go 2 days later to Club Quattro. Mm-hmm. So what was the day like in between? Was it a long? Was it a big trip, or what'd you guys do?
Yeah, you know, I don't remember. It wasn't that far. It's probably at the most maybe a 2 or 3 hour train. I don't know. I'm guessing. I don't remember the day between or the day of, but Club Quattro is probably my favorite show of the run. It was in a mall, and you probably took 15 different escalators to get up. It was on like the 15th floor. Oh, of man. This mall with this big, I mean, the biggest mall you've ever seen. And you go up and up and up, and there's stores everywhere. And I mean, they didn't have like Cinnabon, but like kind of like the equivalent of that type of deal. Yeah, well, it had like, I don't know, Japanese equivalent of Cinnabon. But so it was up and up and up on these escalators. And then you just get, you know, it could have been 90 nondescript store. But you just walk into this random little area, and then to the right they had a locker room, which was pretty weird. We spent the good times bad times in the locker room, you know, full like high school gym locker room type of deal. That was kind of off to the right, and then you walked in and there was this little teeny bar to the right and just a teeny stage and everything. This was by far the smallest show, and I want to say one of the smallest shows I've ever been to. Guessing maybe 500 people. It was just jam-packed. Everyone was on top of the stage. The soundboard was probably, I don't know, 25 feet from the stage.
Awesome.
I talked to Kuroda during the sound check. I mean, I'm sorry, during the set break, and he said, this is like a time machine. And we both were like, yeah, this is like a time machine back to 90. And I remember saying to my wife, like, if you want to know what it was like in 90, this is like how big. I mean, it was just teeny bar show. So,
What about the mall? Was it crowded? Were there other people just like shopping?
There were. It was fully open. I mean, you know, it was 9 o'clock at night, so it was a little.
Oh, yeah, starting to calm down or whatever.
Stop at Penny's.
Yeah.
You stop at Penny's.
Yeah. But
get a belt at Kohl's.
But yeah, I mean, for my money, I mean, people will say the next venue is the Fukuoka is the shit, and it is. But for me, I mean, this was like. It really was like a time machine going back. And I mean, it was just a sweat box. Meat Maze Meat. Give me a break.
Right. that's enough right there. And that's just the first three songs.
Yeah.
Okay. One of them is like a 30-second reprise or whatever, but still, that's, you know,
but you get to say Meat Maze Meat.
Thank you.
Right. Meat, maize, meat. Yeah. It, just great stuff. There's some bluegrass tunes on this one as well. I always have to call those out. And then Antelope, the unfinished Antelope, Contact Into That Sand. The Sand is Monster. And the Roger Prince Caspian pairing is real nice.
Yeah. And good. The Joe Jackson sing along.
There you go.
So
good, good show.
Yeah, really, really fun. And just, I mean, I would say one of the smallest 10 shows I've ever been to.
Wow.
For sure. Just, I mean, because people didn't, there was really no locals for that. So it was just incredible. The people that right. Go away, there's nothing going on. And then the next night is the bomb drop, the proverbial bomb drop in Fukuoka, if you will.
So. Right. So this one, you even included the sound or the 614-2000 drum logos, I guess is the name of the place, Todd?
Yep. Drum logos. And I don't remember.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, I don't remember too much about the venue. It was just a kind of nondescript square room. I don't even know if there's a balcony. I don't think there was, but again, probably twice as crowded as the night before, maybe 800, 900 people, but still small.
Wow.
And it was from the first note, like, you know, Karini Curtin City's gumbo. That gumbo is just, listen to that today. It is just off the chains.
Yep. Yeah. So good. And Into the Llama, which I think is like fire. Like it lets you know that they're still coming out of that hot. Tell me a little bit, did you check a lot of sound checks out? Were you able to, you know what I mean? Like what was your, did you see this one?
This one, I didn't see any sound checks in Japan. So I've been lucky enough to see a handful domestically.
Wondering because we saw the, we've got it listed here in the notes, this sound check.
I grabbed it all from fish.net, the wonderful internet website run by the Mockingbird Foundation.
And it looks bitchin'. I mean, Live and Let Die Jam.
Yeah, they must have watched a James Bond movie on the train or something.
Right.
Or in the hotel the night before.
Right.
Yeah, with 007. Yeah, so. We were going in at showtime every night.
Cool.
And I wasn't privy to any pre-show stuff.
But were they open? Do you know? Was it open? Like, were there, like, you know, was Zizek, is Isaacs there or whatever? Was he rolling in?
Yeah, I didn't. I
don't know.
didn't see him on that tour, but okay. Yeah, no, I don't know if you could have. I mean, I'm sure at the Fuji Rock you could have gone to that.
Sure.
To that, what's the use? That would probably been,
or sit out the fence, right? Or sit outside the fence. Yeah.
Yeah. But I will say that in this whole Japan 2000 tour, the band was entirely accessible. I mean, they were, they were on the train with us. They were playing, you know, Guitar Hero. They were out on the street in front of the, you know, before the show, walking around, mingling with people. So, didn't awesome. Get into any sound checks, but I mean, if you were there, you could go up and talk to, you know, hang out with anybody you wanted to pretty much almost any show. So awesome. That was cool. Yeah. I mean this show is that from the first batch of Live Fish
releases? Yeah, that's one of the CDs they put out the early days.
Right. So you know that, I mean, they were feeling it too. I mean, that second set is one for the ages for sure.
Yeah, I think this is, you know, this is number four. So I think this is one of those that came out of Mike's journal or something. He said,
yeah,
play this show.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Paige curated those early ones. I know Mike said play that Portland one.
Yeah, but anyways, great selection. And because it's a Live Fish, everybody pretty much knows it. So we'll press on to the next night. I love this venue name, Big Cat.
Yeah, it's really, it was a cool venue. They had cool t-shirts. I got a couple of them up in my attic in deep storage. But Osaka was our favorite city on the tour, just like a lot of young people. And this Big Cat was kind of in this area where like people were taking low riders up and down the street. They had like kind of an outdoor thing where you could hang out on the, you know, outside the venue. And it was kind of a big like an open bar, like a bar on the side. And, but I mean, basically just a bar with a stage. But Osaka had a really cool vibe and a really young vibe. And this show is just, it's just another banger. I mean, I didn't listen to the NICU Chalk Dust to open, but, Bag, another awesome ghost, and the disease is just, that disease is ridiculous.
Oh man, I wrote this down. I rarely read directly from my notes, but I'm going to read this. Disease is spitting hot fire for the first 11 minutes, then it breaks into a groove, and I stand by those words, because it really, it's just rages, and finally comes into a groove, and the groove is not not like a 97 groove. It's still, you know, chunky and kind of heavy, and then it gets weird.
Yeah,
like maybe like 19 minutes in, I think it is, and God, I love that.
Yeah, and I think that, like, sometimes, you know, they'll go into a groove that they've done before. Or I think a lot of this Japan stuff is pretty unique sounding, and just the jams that they went into, and then out of that disease, it's a really good Lizards.
Yes.
It just drops down so quietly, and I was really shook, because, you know, I mean, I don't know, I'm not gonna say I was gonna skip the Lizards, but it just caught my attention. I started listening closely, and it's one of the best versions out there, really. So I think it's worth listening to. And then next, Bike, as I mentioned previously, yeah. It was my wife's highlight of the of the, I mean, she loved it all, but I don't know if it was her first bike. I doubt maybe it was, but just ever, this was like a super highlight for her of this tour. And as I mentioned to you guys, my wife turned to me at some point in this, during this tour, and she said, it doesn't matter what song they're playing. It's all so good. And it really, it's true. I mean, it doesn't matter whether it's, you know, Uncle Pen or, or whatever kind of a song that you might typically gloss over. Not that, not hating on Uncle Pen, but whatever.
Yeah, watch out for Jonathan.
Yeah. Sorry, Bill Monroe. But but everything, yeah. And again, and it the set list doesn't look like something you'd be like, holy crap. And then you play it and you're like, holy crap.
Right. No, it's, there's nothing wrong with the set list. I look at it though and I see NICU opener. That intrigues me immediately. Chalk Dust. Okay, cool. But you need to do some good rock. Bag Pen. That's fun. Ghost. That has potential. Frankie Says. Love Little Frankie Says.
Right.
And after a Ghost, there's got to be something going on there, right? And there was.
Right.
And then Divided awesome Sky Ghost. Farmhouse to close the set. Got to hear how they did that.
Yeah.
And then, of course, this second set. Wow.
Yeah. Which, and that's one, two, three, four songs, second set.
Yeah. You can't count
if you don't count the, no.
Yeah. And that, then, this is one night after a four song second set that, you know, is infamous. So,
right.
They're clearly feeling it and they're not, you know, rocking 20,000 seat arenas. So that's pretty cool that they're still feeling it night after night with those, with just a few people. I'm sure they're seeing the same faces coming too, because, you know, Todd, you're at all these and you're seeing familiar faces too, right?
Yeah, for sure. And granted, these are the days where they were tossing off, you know, 18, 19, 25 minute songs, you know, casually. But still, that even those long jams, they've got substance.
Yeah, I mean, that Disease is almost 30 minutes long, if I remember correctly. I think 27 or something.
Yeah.
And there was a, I don't know, somewhere in this listening session with all of these Japan shows, there's another 25 minute Disease, and
yeah,
you know, there's so many.
Honestly, it was hard for me to keep it straight, like. Yeah. You know, like I couldn't pinpoint one part of this jam, like, oh, Mike is doing so, you know, because I listened to so much in just in the last week, but it's all so good. And it kind of melds together in a big way, but in a good way. But there's just so much goodness in
it's really
spread of shows.
So many smooth transitions, and they're kind of, they make things go so well.
I mean, I don't know. The Baker's Dozen people might argue with me, but I can't. I mean, how many shows is this? Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I mean, I think it's the, you know, very consistent for, you know.
Absolutely.
As far as a tour is concerned, I mean, I don't know what else can really be that many consistent shows in a row.
It's a solid batch. Without question, I think this has been pretty great. And there's just one more show, and it's still in Osaka, which you've already acclaimed as one of your preferred cities, and it's at Zepp Osaka. Yep. Is this another like fun park kind of joint?
And I don't remember it being, I mean, it's obviously, I believe they're, you know, related, maybe they have the same owners, but no, this one didn't have the big arcade and the Ferris wheel. Okay. But was another cool venue. Yeah. Yeah. But it was another killer show. I just go for this show. I go to the gym right away. Second set open. I mean, they're a great set in the first set, but
sure.
That second set, Runaway Gym theme from the bottom, is just so, I can't get enough of it. You know, I'd honestly forgotten about it before listening for this, and it is just so strong.
Yeah, I hadn't been back to this one or a lot of these, frankly, in a while. But this that gym is out of this world, and I love how Dogface Boy kind of materializes at a theme.
Mm-hmm. Right,
and then Driver.
Yeah,
Driver after that.
Driver and Bug to close the set, which are like three really just great slow jams, like slow dance songs, you know what I mean? And they're all three of them in the second set. So I'd point out the gym too, sorry. But you got to have a gym at the beginning or the end of a set, or otherwise it doesn't count. And this is prime example.
It's a monster gym, and the bug is awesome. The bouncing around the room, I will note that the first show of the tour, the first bouncing, one from First Tokyo, that it has the outro jam.
Right.
So I didn't notice that. Man, I love that. And I was hoping when they played this, that they would continue. I thought that was like a thing to come. They were going to keep doing the outro jam, but they didn't.
They did play you Harry Hood, though.
Yeah, instead you got a Hood.
But I'll take that any day. I will say, a couple of funny things. So this was the 10th anniversary of my first show, 6-16-90, which was
That's right.
Which was awesome for me. And and I don't know if it's true now, probably not, but so psilocybin was legal in Japan at this time. Whoa. So there was a guy outside the show literally with a garbage bag of mushrooms, like a 50, a huge black garbage bag of mushrooms, just walking around being like, take however many mushrooms you want. So we were like, for sure. Was awesome. But yeah, completely legal and just, take five handfuls. I don't care.
Just like the first half of your vacation, because you spent 10 days in Thailand after this.
So then we went to, then we went to Thailand, which was another, which is a killer trip. I've never been back there, but it's a beautiful country and I would love to. And then not to bore everyone, but so then we did the whole, planes, trains, automobiles. After Thailand, we, flew from Thailand to Tokyo to New York, got off the plane in New York, took a taxi to my apartment, took a train to my mom's house, borrowed her van, and then floored it to Hartford. We missed the first part of the tour, but floored it to Hartford. This was like, I don't know how many hours of travel, 24 hours of travel, and made it for that N2O, Halley's Comet, whatever that Hartford 2000 was. I probably missed the buried alive. I know I was there for the N2O and the Halley's.
Wow.
And there's a Mango song in there somewhere, maybe too.
Jeez.
But it was like nonstop travel to get to get 7,000 miles or something to get to that show.
That's crazy.
Or more. I don't even know.
To the Zep real quick. So yes. We noticed that they played Dogface Boy, Driver, then Driver into Slave, and then A Bug Encore. When I see a set list like this, I kind of think that the band is responding to an attentive audience, or rewarding an attentive audience. Would you suggest that might be accurate?
Yeah, I mean, number one, this is the day before cell phones. So people aren't standing there just pointing their phone. And the Japanese fans were just, they were dialed in. And so attentive is to the end. So there was no talking. There was no, that's probably a pretty good observation. Everybody, wherever they're from was hanging on every note. It was so small, it surrounded you so much, the sound. In the days before, cell phone, internet, and everybody, taking pictures.
It's a great thing to think about. The 93, maybe 92 Trey, that they were building, they were working to get themselves to the bigger arenas or venues,
mm-hmm. Right?
And so maybe they're on the back end of that peak now, and they're like, man, we can still, we know how to do that. We know how to play the Palace of Auburn Hills, whatever that place is called in Philly. That's for Matt. The back end of it, they're playing these little clubs in Japan and they're like, oh, it's probably fun for them, but also
I think they were thrilled.
Really fun to control that whole, the whole room again. Not that he wasn't doing it then, but, in the bigger places, but,
I just think it's a different dynamic, and it's something that they just kind of had, grown apart from. And so, imagine if you're in a big giant band, it's like to go back to club dates, I just think that you could tell they were stoked on it. It was obvious.
Right.
It's obvious in the playing.
And they just can do it without giving up anything. You know, they just take a break, go on vacation, play some shows in a, you know, an interesting, a different place.
And it was the same with Europe. I mean, it's not like Japan was, you know, I mean, Barcelona, Prague, all of those and earlier,
right.
You know, all the 97 ones. I mean, that's why they do it. You know, I don't think they're, you know, making a lot of money playing at a 600 person venue.
Oh, but they're selling all the records doing that, aren't they? Isn't that why they do it?
Right. Right.
They also have to take how many more people with them, right? I mean, that was the whole thing for the demise of 1.0 and 2.0.
Right.
Well, there's a little bit of the Grateful Dead Europe 72 working vacation. We're going to take a vacation. How do we pay for it? Well, we go work.
Right. Yeah.
So. I mean, I remember standing in the Field of Heaven and, like, you know, Trey's mom is like three people down from me and Paluska. It's like, you know, if you're like standing next to Paluska at a show, it's like pretty special show.
Nice. Right.
I would guess because I never saw him at any other show besides that one.
Awesome.
Well,
yeah. Todd, this has been great. I want to thank you for coming on and sharing your story and your time at these shows with us. RJ sends his apologies. He was having internet connection problems. He said he was enjoying listening while he was on, and also sends his thanks for your coming on and joining us.
Cool.
And
I'll send mine as well. I know this is another fun episode to talk with you, Todd, and hopefully you'll pull those shirts out of the attic soon.
Yeah, no, Well, you know, I appreciate you guys. I'm always happy to talk about Japan or anything like that. Easy for me to geek out on it because such good time and really awesome. So thank you.
When there's this many shows in a row, it's hard to force yourself to go and listen to every one, right? Because you want to move on. But I love this because you got to go back, go from start to finish. So,
yeah. Thanks. Thank you. I was stoked to go back and listen to it because for some of it, it had been forever. And it's all so good. So anybody listening, go back and pick one. These shows they're banging.
All right. Well, thank you all so much for listening. Thank you again, Todd, for joining us. Brad, always good to actually be on the same podcast with you.
It's just me and you right now.
It's pretty weird. It's usually
Todd's here too,
but you or me.
I'm on periphery.
Yeah. Well, Jonathan was on a Brad strike for a while, but it's understandable. It's understandable.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening.
That was a joke. You can cut it out.
There's probably some places on the internet you can find us, like hfpod.com and at hfpod on the Twitter. And don't forget, we have the Patreon, and you can hear special HF Pod Plus episodes on there. All right. Thanks, everybody.
This podcast is In the Loop, the Legion of Osiris podcasts. What does that mean? Osiris is a community of great music and culture podcasts. If you like this one, go check out others at osirispod.com and get in the loop. Osiris is partnered with Relics Magazine at relics.com.